All right.
Good morning. Sorry, the audio was a little low this morning. I am testing some new equipment, and I'm doing that just to embarrass our guest, Robin. In all seriousness, welcome, guys. Good morning. We're back at it again this morning. Hopefully, you guys can hear me. Give me a thumbs up if my mic is okay. And yeah, we'll get started here. Welcome to Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 222, where we talk about Bitcoin. This space is scheduled for every weekday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern. If you're in the United States, that probably makes more sense. But I think our guest is currently in Europe, so it's the afternoon for him. We'll get to that. But let's look at the stats here for this morning on Bitcoin. Today is Wednesday, July 16th. 2025, and we are at Bitcoin block height number 905,830, with the Bitcoin price sitting just below 119,000, which means you can still purchase about 842 sats for each US dollar. And let's go into some announcements, and then we'll get it on with our guest. All right, so today and tomorrow, as I've said, we have a couple of guests. Today we have the Austrian Bitcoiner, host of the Robin Sear podcast, Robin Sear. So we'll talk to him in just a minute, and it should be a pretty fun conversation. And then tomorrow we have Dr. Chase Spears returning. You may remember him from last month. We'll jump into some military topics and see how he's doing. Maybe we'll try to orange pill him. Could be fun. So I'd love to have you guys join us for that at 10 a.m. Eastern. All right. Exciting week, guys. We do have the Genius Act just passed, despite some slowdown in the House of Representatives yesterday. And just thought I'd mention that. So we did get one of the three bills that they're playing with at Crypto Week. And so didn't get completely derailed. But with that, want to jump into welcoming our guest. Robin, how are you this morning or this afternoon, sir?
Yeah, it's about 4 p.m. I'm really good. 4 p.m. is perfect timing. I usually record all my podcasts in the afternoon, as I record a lot with Americans and do also a lot of business with Americans. So I'm used to having my day from like starting noon to, I don't know, probably like 8 p.m., 9 p.m. in the evening. It's like morning for Americans and afternoon for me. It's the perfect time.
Awesome. Yeah, you're wide awake, hopefully post-podcast, and really glad that you're with us. Guys in the audience, just wanted to remind you, if you'd like to come up and ask questions, please hit that microphone button in the bottom left. And I did post in the comments there that little purple pill in the bottom right. You can, if you don't want to come up on stage, you can type your comments and questions for Robin and the panel in that little purple pill. So go ahead and do that, and that will help us on the show. But Robin, yeah, again, thanks so much for coming on. Exciting times in Bitcoin. Seems like you jumped into podcasting and posting videos about a year ago. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I started on Twitter like 2 years ago, and then like about a year and like 6 months ago, I think I started my first show. So it's about a year. I think like 2023 in December was my first show. That's like a year and like half, 1.5 years ago. It's been a crazy journey. Like honestly, I really love that I started that, because that kind of imagined like all the things that came from that, and get to know so many people. I even like now here with AC, I had him on the podcast, and people that I see here, like John, he was on my podcast, will be soon back on the podcast. It's just amazing to see all those people and connect and kind of make friends with in the Bitcoin sphere, not just talk about Bitcoin, but actually connect with Bitcoiners. That's the, I guess, the best thing we can do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So what led you to start the podcast? Like, what was the prompting for it? Why did you start it?
It's lonely out there, man. Like, if you're a Bitcoin and you're really extremely hard on why Bitcoin, and then you're really like a maxi in there, and you have your environment, of course, like my closest friends, they get it a little bit. And here and there, I have some really good Bitcoiners already before the podcast. But I have a lot of energy talking about Bitcoin. I have a lot of energy and thoughts on Bitcoin. And I just wanted to put that out there. And the first thing was with Twitter and just like seeing how I can include myself a little bit more in the Bitcoin community, how I can deliver some value. And then just added more things to it. Like I added a video show to it. I added this and that, and trying to just do more in Bitcoin. But the single sad reason is like I wanted to have people to talk to about Bitcoin. Like that was the single sad reason to get into podcasting. And yeah, I think I got into Bitcoin like 4 years before that. That's a whole different reason. We can get into that, but the podcasting was a very, very sad, like very small reason. It's just like I wanted to get to talk with people about Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's great. It's really good to have a lot of different voices, and I think you do a pretty good job. I see that your Sailor video that came out, or podcast that came out about a year ago, has over 170,000 views. That's pretty good for just starting out. How did you get such a big name right away?
Yeah, that's something I'm surprised to. Like honestly, I've started this whole podcasting thing just to get friends and people that I've already known from Twitter on. And then the first bigger guest was Jeff Booth. He followed me on Twitter, and I reached out to him after a month of podcasting, and he's like, "Ah, of course it'll come on." And I'm like, "Oh, what?" Jeff Booth comes on. That seems like, why does he say yes? Like I reached out to him, thinking that he will say no, but like he said yes. So Jeff Booth was kind of like the first bigger guest. And then I just went from there, and like, I just invited everyone. And the guests got bigger, but I always, like I still to this day, I invite people, or people come to me and I try people out that still haven't been on any podcast. I still do this to this day, less and less so, but I still do that with people that have never been on a podcast, and let's see how they do. And yeah, how Sailor was a wild one. He followed me on Twitter, and then I just reached out to him publicly. Like you can look that tweet up to this day, and said like, "Hey, sir, thank you so much for following me. You were a huge inspiration in 2020, why I got into Bitcoin in the first place. Would love to chat with you about Bitcoin on my podcast." And he just publicly replied to me saying, "Yeah, let's do it." And I was like, the fuck just happened? Like, Sailor just said yes. Like he gives me like 1.5 hours of his time. How the heck? How do I deserve that? And yeah, from there, I pretty much have most of the bigger names already on my podcast. A few are still like missing, like Jack Mallers and like a few other ones. Lynn Allner also did not have, but like most of them I already covered. And so I feel just really blessed. I think that shows how Bitcoin is actually so generous. Like the Bitcoin community gives a new guy like me just coming in 2024, basically into the new Bitcoin media sphere. And the Bitcoin community just gives me a chance, you know, like it shows two things. First of all, how kind and generous the Bitcoin community is, but also how freaking early we are. Because if we wouldn't be early, and if we would already be at a satisfied state, it would be way harder for new people to come in. And I just came in and hustled and put a lot of proof of work in to my podcast, did it every single day. I had now over 530 different guests on my podcast. So I put a lot of work into having a lot of people on and having a lot of different perspectives in my podcast. But still, if we would be at 10 million per coin, and adoption with that also would be higher, it would be almost impossible for someone new to come in and get to the state that I'm not right now in the Bitcoin community from zero in like 1 year. Like that's only possible because we're still so early, and because there's not enough. There's a lot more demand for shows and communities and content creators than there are actually content creators still. Like I encourage every single person that I meet start posting content. Like, we need more Bitcoiners to start posting content. We have a lot of TradFi people. We have a lot of crypto people. We have a lot of shitcoin people that post content. But Bitcoiners sometimes, like, they don't want to show their face, and I respect that. They don't want to be out there. I respect that. But if you are someone who wants to put this face and this voice out there, like, do it. And even if you don't want to do it, you can just have an AI character and write the script and write those things. Like, in this day and age, you don't even have to put your face and your name and your voice out there to create content. So, like, educating, I feel a deep responsibility that we are educating the next generation. We're educating the next Bitcoin generation, not in terms of like how old they are, but like the next generation of the generation that comes into Bitcoin in 2025, 2026, 2027. I think I lost my track there, but like, I really am big on having more people talk about Bitcoin. Even as a podcaster, you're like, you're almost incentivized to say, oh, don't create content, because that gives me more competition. But I go the other way. I'm like, I want to have more people in the Bitcoin team, because my competition is not other Bitcoin podcasters. My competition are crypto podcasters, are shitcoin podcasters, are TradFi podcasters that talk about ETFs and all those things. So I encourage everyone, and we're working together good. And I just want to lift up people in the Bitcoin community with my podcast as good as I can. And yeah, that's where I'm.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've said it before on this show. You know, if you win, we all win, right? So that's, I think, why this community is so great. And so it's great to hear that you have received that support, got some really big name early guests, which is awesome. And yeah, it's pretty surprising too. You got Sailor in person, didn't you? How did that work out? Did you have to travel to him? Did he travel to you? How was that?
That's another one of those weird Bitcoin community communications that just magically works out. And I can tell you the whole story because it's not that long, actually. I was going to the Bitcoin Prague conference, and he was also going to the Bitcoin Prague conference. And it was just a month before the Bitcoin Prague conference where he agreed to be on the podcast. And I made everything public. So I publicly asked him to be on the podcast. He publicly said yes to be on the podcast. And a co-founder, Matthias of Bitcoin Prague, publicly asked, hey, do you guys want to do that at Bitcoin Prague in person? And I was like, yeah, that sounds better than remote. And so I reached out to the assistant of Sailor and saying, like, hey, would Sailor be open to do it in person also in Prague? And she wrote back, yeah, he would be open to do that. I reached out to Matthias, the co-founder of Bitcoin Prague, and said to him, hey, he would be open. And from that moment onwards, Bitcoin Prague basically managed with Sailor's team that he will be on my podcast at the Treasure Studio that they have set up there at Bitcoin Prague. And I was like, yeah, like, I have it in person now on, and I didn't do anything for that. That was just the generosity of Treasure, generosity of Bitcoin Prague, and also the generosity of Sailor himself doing that. So it's just I truly believe that if you are really working hard and you're putting the proof of work, things come your way. If you have well-intentioned actions and you are putting the best out there in the world, things, I'm not a spiritual person, not at all. But I've seen it enough in my very young life, with just 26 years old, that if you are well-intentioned and you really put out something for the community gives you back, even if you don't ask for it. And that's one of the small examples where I'm like, I did not ask anyone to have the studio there. I didn't even have to pay for the studios, all those things. It just came back because I was well-intentioned and I just put out the work.
Yeah, that's really
and awesome. Luck. Luck is a big component also of that.
You know, I think too, like, to your point, I think that a lot of people just don't try. right? They're just, they tell themselves all these stories as to why this can't be, or why they should not even bother throwing it out there. And there's people out there that'll take chances on things and, you know, throw things up against the wall and see what sticks. And I think that's what it takes sometimes, but it's really cool story. So tell us, since, you know, we're kind of on the Saylor subject, tell us how you came to Bitcoin and how he played a role in orange pilling you and the time frame and all that.
I was a stock pro. I was picking stocks. I was trying to game the fiat system. I was kind of aware that fiat isn't good. Not that I was aware of the money print and all that, that I'm now aware. But I was aware that if I save in fiat, if I save in my euros or like in your dollars, I will lose. I was well aware of that. But I was not aware of Bitcoin. I was aware of that. Let's try to pick stocks. And picking stocks was fun, honestly. I started with that when I was like 19 years old in school. I was sitting in the last row, not paying attention at all what's going up there with the math classes or German classes. I was just picking stocks and trying to figure out what's the next best thing. And because of luck and because of, goodwill or whatever, I picked really good stocks and the performance was really amazing. And so more and more people kind of reached out to me and said like, oh, how do you do that? And I tried to teach them, but I didn't really know what I'm doing, so I didn't also really know how to teach them in hindsight. But more people kept asking me about that Bitcoin thing. And I always said, because I was a Warren Buffett kid, I was always saying like, oh, it's a scam. Like it doesn't have cash flow. Like it's gold, but worse. I always said that for your 3 years straight. And at some point, people could just kept asking me how this Bitcoin thing actually works and why do I think that's a scam. And I wanted to prove them like why it's a scam. So there was a weekend where I decided let's dig into Bitcoin and really figure out why it's a scam. So I kind of tried to find the flaw into Bitcoin and I didn't find one. So it was like a Friday afternoon where I was really focused and said like, it will be a scam. And Sunday afternoon where I said like, it might not be. Might not be a scam. And this kind of orange pilled me. And this was right around the time where Anthony Pompliano interviewed Saylor. And because it was coming from stock, Saylor spoke the language of the TradFi stock investors. He's just a publicly traded CEO at that time. And he spoke that language that I wanted to hear very well. So this resonated with me. After that, I found Seifert and Amuse. I think he played a really big role also in orange pilling me with the Bitcoin standard. I guess like almost everyone stumbles across that at some point. Andreas Antonopoulos was also a big part of that. And then just like getting deeper and deeper into the podcast world in 2020. And I think from 2020, where I just converted a little bit of my portfolio into Bitcoin, it took me about a year to go all in, like 1 year to really sell all my stocks and like just go into Bitcoin. It was not a lot. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm still a kid. Like I'm 26 years old. I'm a kid. I'm fully aware of that. So I didn't never really had a lot of money. But I'm now since I'm 21 years old, always saving in Bitcoin. I think that's really cool that I can tell that story, that since 21 years old, I also love that number. I'm all in Bitcoin. I'm really focusing on Bitcoin, and that's kind of what I'm doing.
Yeah, very cool. Guys, please do share the space. Would love to get this out to as many people as possible. We do have 68 people in the space and 3 shares. So let's now 7. Okay, good. Hey, people are listening. But I did want to say good morning to Texas Toast and AC. Gentlemen, do you have any questions for Robin?
Good morning. No, it's interesting. You know, it feels like a lot of the same story that a lot of people have. They, especially in the investment world with stock picking, it's like everybody starts out just trying to like, everybody is searching for a way to beat inflation and to make our dollars grow. And, you know, you can feel like an all-star, in the stock world, kind of in a system that's designed to go up and to the right, especially with the last, over the last, 10 years really of money printing minus COVID. It's like, you know, everything, if you're in a blue chip, you know, S&P 500, anything, you're going to get on paper, it looks like decent returns. And so it's interesting that you kind of went from that to, you know, to hating on Bitcoin to loving it. And to me, it draws a big parallel to apologetics with Christianity. Like a lot of Christians, myself included, kind of tried to prove it wrong and then end up not being able to and coming to it that way. So I see some parallels there. I don't have any questions, but I just wanted to make that comment. Maybe throw it over to AC if he's got something.
Yeah. Hey, good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, Robin. Great chatting with you again. Great seeing you in Vegas for the first time and meeting in real life. I'll say for the audience, one of the things that I love about Robin's podcast, probably the most, is he gives an opportunity and a voice to the not so big names, right? And this kind of speaks to your journey, Robin, into Bitcoin, because everybody finds Bitcoin through a different path. And I think the opportunity that you give to people to share their story, it resonates. It could resonate with somebody who, you know, they're still trying to figure out Bitcoin, but they haven't figured it out yet. And you have a guest that comes on that speaks their language or speaks from their world, and it makes sense to them. And so that's what I love most about your podcast and some of the other ones that are out there that give a voice to the random Bitcoin plebs out there. And so I love the proof of work. I think last time we chatted, you were still doing or recording like two or three episodes a day. So amazing. Keep up the great work. And yeah, if for the people in the audience, if you're not following Robin, definitely give him a follow. He's putting out amazing content out there.
Thank you, man.
Really good stuff.
I appreciate it.
We have BFP up here, so I know you joined us late. Maybe you can jump in on the conversation in a little bit. But Robin did have another question. Tell us about the state of things. You kind of mentioned it is lonely out there in Austria. And just curious, what's your experience? How are people associating Bitcoin or how are they thinking about it? And yeah, just I'm guessing I know the answer, but go ahead.
It's really interesting. I mean, Austria is very small, so I'll share a little bit of like Europe and maybe Germany and all the things that I'm seeing, because Austria is literally just 8 million people. It's like bigger city in America. So it's funny. For example, Germany is a really interesting example where the government really doesn't get it, where they sell 50,000 Bitcoin. I think a year or 1.5 years, like, I don't know when I go, but about a year ago, or like maybe 8 months ago. And, we see one of the biggest tensities of full node runners in Germany. Like, there is a huge community of full node operators in Germany. A lot of mining going on in Germany, even though the conditions are not that favorable for Germany to mine Bitcoin. A lot of like self-custody maxes, privacy maxes are there. They're Gigi. I mean, Gigi is probably best known in the whole community. So there is a big difference between what the state and the government is doing versus what the grassroots movement is doing. And in America, I feel like that's a little bit different, where the grassroots movement is amazing. Like, there's a lot of meetups and a big culture there also, but also politics gets it more and more. We have now more and more favorable politicians that actually speak about that. And I think for Americans, maybe they, I don't know if you appreciate that enough, that you have politicians actually talking about Bitcoin. I followed the Austrian election, I followed like the Germany election. Bitcoin isn't an even topic there. It's not that we have like one pro guy that Mike gets in and stuff like that, but we don't really talk about it at all. Might be different in some small countries in Europe, but like on general things in the European election was like a year ago. There was no talk at all about Bitcoin. So even that Bitcoin is a topic in America, and then the president coming to the Bitcoin conference, and the vice president then coming to the next Bitcoin conference, and the congressman and all those things. Even if you hate Trump, even if you hate all of what he is doing, that he's coming there shows that he's appreciating the Bitcoin community to the degree that he sees it. The politicians in Europe don't even see the community. They don't get that the community is so big and so powerful. But I think it's just like Europe is about a Bitcoin cycle behind America when it comes to that. So I expect in 4 years, Europe to be also a little bit more awake in that sense and be a little bit more like, oh yeah, Bitcoin, there's a big crowd there that actually knows things, and they're actually powerful, and there's a big voice, and we have to get to those Bitcoin conferences. We also have like a huge Bitcoin conference in Amsterdam. We have it in Bitcoin Prague, where there's about 10,000 people. So yeah, I think Europe has I hope the grassroots movement actually gets into policies long term, so the politicians also get it. But even if not, we will be fine. Like, Bitcoin doesn't need the government or the legislator and the executives and all those things. But it would be better and more smooth if they will be on board.
Yeah, good stuff. Go ahead, Texas Toast. I think I see your hand.
Yeah. I mean, I know a little bit about German politics and kind of their parliamentary system, and not so much Austria, but it's kind of crazy that, I don't know, maybe I'm way off on this, but you would think that politicians would kind of, there would be some sort of political angle here for the constituents to have one of these multi-parties that are available to you in Germany to adopt this thing. I mean, is there any, have you seen anything on the horizon with any small party that might be starting to gain traction talking about this kind of stuff?
In Germany, there is the AfD and the FDP that talked about before the German election a little bit about Bitcoin. The FDP actually flew out of the parliament. FDP actually had the finance minister before the election. Then they blew up the government. And then the day the finance minister was no longer the finance minister of Germany, then he started to talk about Bitcoin, because he's like, oh shit, like there are a lot of Bitcoiners in Germany and I should get those votes. But he didn't, and he completely lost. He was even on a popular Bitcoin, on the biggest, I would say the biggest, German speaking YouTuber on with an interview. And it was okay-ish. He learned a lot for that, but like it was not the best one, and he flew out. So like he doesn't matter anymore. And he also is now completely gone from politics. Then there's the AfD. They are the second biggest force now in Germany, but and in the government. They're the only ones that I think are the closest to Trump's politics, I would say, in Germany. They are open to the idea. They are the closest to adopting Bitcoin. And there are some Bitcoiners in their rows. But I wouldn't go as far as they are the Bitcoin party. Yeah, like that would be a stretch for me. But they're probably the closest. So nobody really is like taking charge on that, like Trump did in the election process, where he actually went to the Bitcoin conference, like really spoke. And there's only like the second, the third, and the fifth row people that sit there and like go here and there to some conferences, but it's not really like it's not comparable at all. I think, as I said before, it's just like 4 years behind. I hope so.
Yeah, it's, I think it's, it should be interesting. I think for us, on this space anyway, most people I think that are in the audience are, you know, living in America or Mexico, at least in this hemisphere, right? And so it's interesting just to hear, maybe the state of things in Europe on the ground. Do you ever get a chance to talk to people, like in real life, like about Bitcoin, like on the streets?
I have one more before I have one more comment on that, because I hear some American Bitcoiners complaining that we're simping to the government. And I think there's something going on that we have to be very, very sure about saying, like, we don't need the government. That's for sure. But as a European that listens to elections and that listens to all the things that goes on in policy, I'm envied that there's even a discussion happening in America on the political side, because if we want it or not, the politics are there right now. I mean, there are, I would also love to have less state. I would also love to pay as little taxes as possible, maybe even zero. But it's the fact that we have now taxes, we have the political system, we have governments and all those things. And so I would rather have them be for Bitcoin than against Bitcoin, which, because this makes the life for Bitcoiners in that jurisdiction just easier. So I really appreciate that America is taking on that topic on a political side, even though we know that we don't need the government, but it is better to have them on our side than against our side, I guess. And I don't fear that they will infiltrate us. Because how should they do that? But on the second question that Bob said, I do speak mostly with Bitcoiners. My life is fairly wrapped around Bitcoin. So I do live in a very nice bubble. but here and there, I have a big family. So there, when I go to family meetings, there I have a lot of not Bitcoiners still, there's like a huge family there. My granddad and my grandma was they produce kids, a lot of them. So I have a fairly big family. And when I listen to people outside my kind of hemisphere, like those who haven't spoken with me that much, I still hear like, oh, governments will ban it, oh, this and that. Like, I hear a lot of the same things that I used to hear even like 4 or 5 years ago. So it hasn't changed that much. And people are not as excited anymore about higher prices. They kind of got numb to that. Yeah, Bitcoin will rise in price. Like that we hit the 100K, nobody really cared about. Now I'm starting to get some messages of old friends and family members like, oh, like, oh, should I buy Bitcoin now? Like, is it now a good time to buy Bitcoin? It's usually that question of how do I buy Bitcoin? So it gets a little bit more now with outside of my bubble. But honestly, my life is fairly wrapped around, in the Bitcoin bubble. My friends are Bitcoiners. My girlfriend is a Bitcoiner. My dad, my mom, my sister, like I've successfully wrapped my life completely into Bitcoin. So I'm probably not the best person to speak to on what's the normal Austrian person thinking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, it's a good answer. Everybody's experience is different, obviously. I did have a question from a local gentleman in DFW. I'm in Texas, and he was asking if you knew anything about in Vienna. There are these what I would call privacy vaults. Are you familiar with that? Where people from all over the world come and are able to store value in these privacy vaults in Vienna. Are you familiar with those at all?
I have no clue what you're talking about. I mean, there are bank vaults. There are vaults at like train stations where you can keep things. But it seems to be something else. So I'm not aware of that. I should Google that. Actually, it feels like I should know about that.
Yeah, I can send you a link in the chat, but I was reading one of the websites that he sent me, and it's called Das Safe, and I was just looking at it, and it seems like, you know, there's high net worth people who are trying to avoid maybe some of the egregious taxation. Seems like you can legally buy gold and maybe even store your Bitcoin keys in these vaults, and they have cameras for monitoring, but they don't record in some of them. And so it seems like people are using this as a tool to, well, there's a variety of reasons why you might want to do that, right? So yeah, just curious to see. But if you're not familiar with them, maybe you could go check them out. Seems like they'll give you a tour because they have some open vaults, according to what I was reading. And you can see for yourself what it is and the security and all of those good things. So, yeah, but I did have Bitcoin Liberty Live come up on the stage. Wanted to say good morning and question or comment for Robin.
Good morning. Yes, thank you, Bitcoin veterans. I just want a quick shout out to the work you did last year in North Carolina with the floods. It makes me think of the Texas floods happening ongoing right now. Just your boots on the ground, grassroots efforts to help people. Number one, thank you for that. Robin Sayre, great guest. Shout out to Robin Sayre. A year ago, I was on his podcast, and I was honestly, at the time, Robin, you were still growing up and coming, smaller than you are. And you invited me on your podcast just as a friend of a friend, basically. You'd had my buddy on because he'd written a book and was doing some work in the space. We had a podcast together, and then you just reached out to me as like kind of a nobody, my own little small podcast. Basically, what I think has helped work for you, and you have some perspective on this in terms of proof of work, what you did, I think, that works and can work for others is like every single day putting out something, putting out a podcast, present on X and on YouTube, doing the shorts, the clips. And I think that's what has really worked for you and what can work for others is, one, you know, not giving up, and two, keeping it steady, consistent, day by day, putting a little bit out there. One thing that I think Jeff Booth, a takeaway I got from Jeff Booth years ago was sort of like, okay, yeah, you're in on Bitcoin, you're working on Bitcoin. What more can you do? Is there a little more you can do? What you're doing now, is there a little more you can do? And maybe that's navigating in a different direction, trying something new, but keep thinking about it. Just a comment, really, no question, but you might relate to effectively not just a volume of proof of work, but chipping away at it and not getting overwhelmed. Do you think that worked for you?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate that because it's like getting one person on a day is a lot of work. It's like a lot of communicating. But I think consistency and the proof of work works for everyone. The proof of work is something that is just so important in the Bitcoin sphere. And I talked about it in the beginning. I don't want to repeat it too much, but especially like if you put up proof of work, I think you will be rewarded for that. There's some weird law. If you're honest, if you are good intentioned and you just put a proof of work out there, people will just like, people will appreciate that and people see that. And Jeff Booth is an amazing example because he literally said at the end of our first podcast that we did together, and I asked him specifically, oh, like, what's your advice for like young people like me? And he said, like, if you are in Bitcoin and you already converted your financial energy in Bitcoin, what are you still doing in the fiat world working if you had the possibility to work for Bitcoin full time? And this was literally making me think of how, like, oh, it's true. Like, I have a Bitcoin podcast. I have all my financial energy in Bitcoin. But I still work for, like, a fiat company. And so why do I do that? Like, why don't I fully integrate in Bitcoin? And there's this fair argument of saying, like, hey, Bitcoin is just money. You can work, if you love your job, and you love what you do, if you're like a nurse, if you're like a doctor, if like whatever you are, like an engineer, if you love what you do, Like, just keep doing that. Orange pill your company and save Bitcoin. Like, that's the purpose of Bitcoin. But if you're like me and you cannot shut up about Bitcoin and you really want to make this Bitcoin thing work, like there's no better time to do this than right now. By the way, I see Oz also here. Like, he's an old buddy of mine. Like, thank you so much for trading in, Oz, man.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you're comfortable talking about it, Robin, but are you still employed outside the podcast, or have you transitioned fully yet?
I fully transitioned. I'm thankful to all my partners because now I'm converted. So I made the jump last March and made the jump big and just like went all in into Bitcoin podcasting. And back then I did not have the funding or like any income. I just was jumping. I was like, let's try it out and see if it works and see if I can make it work. And yeah, thankfully it actually did work out. And then now I even have like free freelancers that help me with the post-production. So I can do a lot more things. And I have partners like MicroSeed and the Bitcoin Way and Coin Vigilante that kind of help me out and support me financially to make this podcast work. So yeah, I'm really thankful for them because this allows me to be all in and do this every single day from like I wake up, I think about Bitcoin, think about how we can enhance the Bitcoin message, and then I go to sleep doing the same thing.
Yeah, so you're a relatively young guy, which it's amazing what you've been able to accomplish in a year, and you've taken the plunge, the dive, and it seems to be working out for you. What's next? Are you just working on scaling this thing and growing it, or are you looking at other opportunities in the Bitcoin space because of your platform?
The one big thing I will make sure is that my podcast keeps going. This is the most important thing. I think focus is something that, especially for young people, is really valuable. And there's a lot of opportunities coming your way. There's a lot of distractions coming your way. I could do this. I could do this. I could do this. But the main focus has to be my podcast. And this will always be my main focus. And even if Bitcoin somehow becomes boring because everyone uses it already, I will still have my podcast and just talk about something else. Maybe still Bitcoin, maybe something else. I don't know. But I'm really high on that belief that Bitcoin will become boring because we all just use it, and it's a boring subject because, yeah, we all just use it, and we don't have to orange pill people, we don't have to entertain people in this fear anymore. And then I'll talk about something else. I have no clue what I will talk about then, but I will always have the podcast. I'm getting more and more involved in companies. I've took a stake in MicroSeed and the partner, so I'm working more closely with them than with other partners. And I'm working also with all the other partners to just like make them bigger, make them better, and kind of just improve the Bitcoin economy, the Bitcoin ecosystem where I can, and help them out wherever I can with my media company, with my podcast. And that's what I try to do. But my main focus is like the next big thing is my podcast. that's the main focus. It's the same answer I give to people that ask me what's the next big Bitcoin coin that I can buy. Yeah, it's Bitcoin. Like, what's the next altcoin I can buy that goes up 100x? Yeah, it's Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's really good. One and two, welcome to the stage, John Q. Did you have a question, sir?
Hey, no, I just want to give a shout out to Robin. I'm just sitting here listening patiently, and I just wanted to say, yeah, he's the true real deal, and he's really needed in the space. I'm a Bitcoin evangelist in California, and although I don't have a podcast, I tune into his show regularly, and I reached out to him last year to see if I could come on his show. I had never done it before, and he graciously accepted, and you know, I thank him for that. We need more people like Robin, and we also need people, you know, with boots on the ground. So, you know, it's important for all of us just to
go out and spread the word, whether it's, you know, in person or however you can do it, because this is truly an opportunity of, I believe, a species here. You know, we may never see this again. So I just want to say thank you, Robin. You know, it's great to watch your podcast and, tune in on a regular basis. And, you know, I'm actually in Europe right now, Robin, just to let you know. I'm here evangelizing out in Warsaw right now. Picking up a lot of, information, seeing a lot of the growth out here in the Bitcoin community. But, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it.
That's awesome, man. It almost seems like I'm paying those people to come up and say nice things about me. It's not the case. I promise you guys.
I'm here quite a lot, and I've seen the growth out here over the last 8 years. It's actually amazing. It's at least here in Poland, there's more and more growth, more Cantors, which are exchanges out here, growing all the time, more, Bitcoin ATM machines, out here. And I can still tell it's early out here. I don't see anybody walking around with Bitcoin shirts on and whatnot. But I can definitely see the growth out here, especially from when I started looking 8 years ago, there was like maybe one ATM machine I could find in the whole city of Warsaw. You know, now they're everywhere, underground, crossing streets, and they're really popping up, shopping malls. So some good stuff going on out here, just to let you know.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's really good. Hey, thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming up. Did see a hand from BFP. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Robin. I had a quick question. I know you do the podcast. I've never listened, but I was wondering if you listen to podcasts, which ones were they? If you do, and if not, then obviously, why not?
Nowadays I barely listen to any podcasts of Bitcoin podcasts outside myself outside of my own, just because of the time thing. Usually do like two or three recordings a day. Before I had my own podcast, I really liked what Bitcoin did. It was really a nice podcast back in the day. Now I've not watched a single episode with Danny, but I'm sure he does an amazing job at that. And now I'm so involved in the Bitcoin community, just doing my day-to-day stuff, I'm now actually trying to, when I listen to other podcasts, doing non-Bitcoin podcasts, like about entrepreneurship, about media, about personal branding, about AI, about all those topics, because I'm already so involved and so deeply ingrained in the Bitcoin sphere that I cannot really benefit a lot from listening to another Bitcoin podcast, but I can benefit in the Bitcoin community, and my podcast can also benefit from me listening to other podcasts. For there, I love Joe Rogan. I love Diary of a CEO, even though he's weird with Bitcoin and shit coins, but like, his entrepreneurial stuff sometimes is really legit. How's this guy called Chris Williams? He also has some really nice guests sometimes on. So I try to listen to non Bitcoin things outside of when I don't have my own podcast. And sometimes, rarely, I listen to Bitcoin episodes when I feel like there's a real banger in there, like, oh shit, I should listen to that. And what I also do is when I have a guest on, I usually put like 2, 3, 4 transcripts of podcasts that this guest has been on in my AI tool and kind of let it summarize to get to know what the guest is all about, what he's speaking about. And for my Bitcoin education for this journey, I rely on my guests. They are awesome. So I'm very happy to have them.
Thanks. Do you mainly get your traffic from YouTube, or do you have other sources that you're getting your downloads from?
The YouTube channel is the biggest one. That's by far the biggest thing, biggest platform where people actually listen to the podcast. I also have, I don't know, like 1,500 listeners on Spotify, 1,000, maybe something like that on Apple Podcast. Fountain is really fun. There's also a few hundred people that listen there. I also started Rumble. When Simply Bitcoin got banned, thankfully they are back. I started my Rumble account because I just think it's important. So I would say, I don't know, probably like 70 to 80% of my viewership is on YouTube and the rest is somewhere else. I stopped posting the full episode on Twitter just because I've seen the statistics and nobody's watching the full episode on Twitter. Like literally there's like 5 people watching to the end and I'm like, doesn't make any sense to upload it on Twitter when there is like 10,000 impressions on the video and there's 5 people watching it to the end. So I only post like the first 7 minutes on Twitter and then you have to go to YouTube, Rumble, or any of the other platforms. If Twitter changes their platform so that it's good for watching long term, to watch long form video, I will start posting long form videos again on Twitter also. But yeah, that's kind of the setup.
Yeah, that kind of rolls into the question I was going to ask. You know, being in Europe, we hear these rumblings about banning self custody and some of these regulatory risks that are being talked about, being imposed, whether it's CBDCs or, you know, banning self-custody or some sort of, you know, something along these lines. Who knows what the Europeans are doing? As an American, I just have to kind of shake my head. But have you kind of ran into any censorship blocks since starting your podcast? Like, I think that's obviously a good thing going over to Rumble and kind of diversifying your outlets. But have you personally ran in any blocks or how do you think about the kind of censorship and self-custody route in Europe? And how are you looking at that?
Two different things. So first of all, like just from the podcast, there has been one episode that has been flagged by YouTube, but this has nothing to do with Europe. This has more to do with YouTube and America. It's just because there was a guy talking about the environment, the climate, and this has only been flagged, not as like wrong. They just put some extra information on there, which I found funny. They're like, hey, you're talking about something controversial, let's put our official stuff on there. And I don't know if the official stuff is so good, probably not. And they diminished my ad revenue on that video a little bit, but I didn't really care about that. So I'm really fine with the YouTube so far with censoring because I haven't been censored at all. But this can change literally tomorrow. So I'm fully aware of that. That's why I diversify. The other thing about Europe, there's an aspect to hearing it from the news outside of Europe. It's always a little bit bigger than actually the day-to-day because also sometimes news gets out there that isn't even law yet and it's just like a proposal. There's also like this what is actually currently as a policy there and what is kind of proposed. And there are some weird proposals coming out. I 100% agree. Like that. It's like, oh, what the heck? Like, no, self-custody. What is an unhosted wallet? An unhosted wallet? Unhosted wallet is freedom. And you want to ban that? You want to make it more complicated? That shit. It also led to some exchanges being on-ramp only. So one of the exchanges, for example, 21 Bitcoin that I've been promoting in the past, no longer do that much. They only let you transfer the coins off their exchange and no longer on there. If I'm like, I've not used them for a few months, maybe they change it again. So that's bad. But there are a lot of alternatives. Like literally we have only in the free German speaking areas, Switzerland, Germany and Austria, we have 4 different Bitcoin only brokers. Like it's like very small countries and we have like 4 different Bitcoin only brokers. They do self custody and all of those things. There's a lot coming now with Mika. There are positive things coming with it. There's negative things coming with it. The positive things is that it, the same rules for whole of Europe. The negative things, kind of the travel rule and all those things, and like the Satoshi test to prove that all this what is actually yours and those things. It's hard for me because I don't like those things, and it's the thing where it's not as bad that I would say, oh, I have to get out of Europe, but it's also not so good that I'm like just ignoring it. So that's why I'm watching politics, and I think we all should at least observe what's going on, because we have to make decisions if we want to stay or if we want to fight and all those things. So I'm watching it, and I'm concerned about the developments, but at the same time, we see also more and more Bitcoiners, more and more, not even Bitcoiners. We see more and more of those political parties rising up to power that are against the EU policies. For example, in Austria, the biggest party is the one that is the most critical about the EU. This party is no longer, is not in the government, but it's the biggest party in Austria. It's a weird system that we have, that the biggest parties, cannot be, can sometimes be outside of the government. In America, it's the winner takes it all. In Austria, you kind of have to find, you have to find coalitions, and then the coalition who has over 50%, gets to say what's going on. And this party has, I think, like 28%, and they won the election. But like the other parties have enough percentages to go over 50% and can therefore make the government. So, I see on the one side, some pretty good forces for being critical against what's going on with the EU, but also I see what the EU is doing. So it's kind of like, I don't like it, but it's not as bad that I would say I have to flee Europe, which I'm prepared to do. I have everything digitally. I'm literally part owner of an American company now, with Microseed. So like I can be gone like tomorrow. Like if it comes to, I can buy a flight ticket tomorrow and be gone, and I'm prepared to do that. And I think, it's an interesting thing that we should talk about, having a plan B, not Bitcoin, but what are you doing if you know that you have to leave the country tomorrow because there's something happening? I don't think that will happen in America anytime soon. But maybe people are not in America. Maybe they live in a country that is not as safe, and they're like, hey, what if there is some war going on and you have to leave like tomorrow? Do you have a plan for that? Do you have the things in order for that? That's an interesting, emergency plan that, Bitcoiners like to talk about that, like, but I don't think a lot of them actually have those plans in place.
Yeah, really good comments. Things for people to think about. I did have another question. We're coming up towards the end of the show. I wanted to be respectful of your time, Robin. But I did have another question, and maybe we can allow other folks on the panel to have either final thoughts or one more question for you as well. But I was just thinking, I mean, we've kind of touched on it a little bit. You were talking about different topics that you talk about on your show and things you're interested in. One of them is AI, and that comes up in Bitcoin spaces quite a bit. I was wondering, you know, obviously your native language is German, and you're doing this in English. Have you looked into doing a German version of your, or are you already doing that and I'm missing it?
I'm not doing German at all. The only German content I'm doing is when I'm guest at another podcast in German. So there's Mark from the Bitcoin Hotel, and I've been on his channel, in German and spoke about German and Bitcoin. But honestly, I'm more comfortable in English these days because, my girlfriend is in, from India, so she is speaking English with me. So I speak at home mostly English. I speak in my profession now with Bitcoin and podcasting and media only English. So English is kind of my main language now, even though I'm living in a German speaking country, which is weird. I acknowledge that. But I don't have any German speaking, podcasts going. And honestly, there's no need for that. We have amazing German speaking podcasters, and we have amazing German speaking content creators. And when I started the podcast, I actually thought about that. I thought about, is there a market gap in the German speaking area that I can fill, or that I should fill? Then I would do it in German, but that just isn't. There's like really high quality podcasts, there's content creators, there's live streamers. And this all those things are also in the English speaking space. So I can freely choose if I want to do it English and Bitcoin, English or German. And I chose English mainly because of the guests. So I want to talk with people from America, Australia, Africa, India, like from all continents. If I speak in German, I can only talk with German people. So I can only talk with the people from Switzerland, Austria, and Germany. And there's like 10x more people are in the English-speaking world. And plus, when you speak English, you can still talk to all the Germans because guess what? They also speak English. So you kind of get all of the guests. Also, the audience, of course, is bigger. But the main reason was just the guests. Like, I don't even know if I can do a German-speaking podcast every single day with a different guest. Like, I don't know if this is possible.
Yeah, I wonder if you could just run. I've seen some folks putting their videos through AI tools, and it just dubs it in German. But then also, like, the voices come out in German, or, you know, some other language. So maybe something to look into. Maybe it's not worth it. I do have a lot of friends in Germany. I lived there for a little while, and they're definitely, I think there could be more voices in German speaking countries too. And don't forget about that little tiny country, Liechtenstein. They do speak German too.
true. And, I think also we need more in English. So I think, the German speaking area is actually, they have really good content creators, but obviously you need more, the same as the English speaking space needs more. There are some countries like Hungary, for example, that really needs content creators. Like, they don't have good ones. I also heard there's not a lot of French people doing really good things. So I think AI will be really handy there. And I looked into this YouTube automatic feature, and they have an automatic feature of like saying like, hey, your podcast is now just available in every single language. Not every single, I think they started with 7 or so. And you can just activate that. But I activated that and I tried the German version, and it's so bad. And I just did not want people to listen to this German version because it was so bad. And I was just not satisfied with the quality. So I will be patient, and I will be waiting till the quality gets to a state where it's just really good. And then my podcast will be available in every single language at some point. I think AI is just getting bigger and just getting started, the same as Bitcoin. And with that, at some point, it won't matter what language you're speaking, because you can live translate every single translate every single conversation, and you can just do that. Like, I could speak German right now, and you could speak French right now, and all of the listeners are hearing us live in English. Like, that's a real thing that will be happening. And I think that's not that far away. I don't know if it's 2 years or 20, or not 20 years, definitely not, but it might be 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years. I think 10 years like would be too long, probably like somewhere between like 1 and 5 years.
Yeah, thanks for that. Good to know that YouTube hasn't figured that part out yet. Guys, we are getting towards the end of the show. Really, once again, want to thank Robin for coming on. Texas Toast, BFP, AC, and our newbies, Bitcoin Liberty Live and John Q. Any final thoughts or questions? Let's go around the horn, Texas Toast. Any questions or final thoughts for Robin?
I got a quick question. I'm not sure if you read at all, and if you do, I was just wondering if you had a favorite book or top three book in mind.
Bitcoin related or like just generally?
Just generally, not really Bitcoin specific.
I don't read enough, that's for sure. The most recent book that was for me quite impactful was Buy Back Your Time. I think most people are, some people are familiar with that, because I had to figure out how to outsource. And some, a guest of mine actually recommended that, like, because he saw how much I struggled alone and doing like 60, 70 hours work week. And he's like, hey, you should read that book. And I'm like, ah, okay, let's try it out. And I literally soaked it up and I was like, fuck, that's so good. Like if you are a sole entrepreneur or anything like that, you will benefit from that book a lot, just like thinking about outsourcing and thinking about how to get some time back to focus on bigger projects and like how to figure out what tasks to outsource and all of that. I forgot his name. There's Key Person of Influence, this book, but not this one, but another one. I forgot the title of the book, the same one that wrote Key Person of Influence. It's really good also if you want to build a personal brand, if you want to build something in the marketing and branding perspective. It really gave me a lot of interesting insights of how to do a personal brand and connect it with like a company. So those kind of books I try to read outside of Bitcoin. My personal favorite is still the Bitcoin Standard. It is the book that really fully orange pilled me. There have been so many great books coming after that. But if it has to be just one, I think the Bitcoin Standard just has to be mentioned there. And it's still like one heck of a book. And I still haven't asked Saifedean actually to be on my podcast. I will do that once. I just have to find the courage because he really orange built me and he has been also a big part of my orange building journey along with Sale and the others that I've mentioned.
Yeah, really good. Anybody else on the stage want to ask Robin a question before we wrap up the show this morning? All right. I will take that as a no, and we won't give people crickets at this stage, but that's a wrap, guys. Do want to thank everyone who is up on stage. Please follow all these guys, including Robin. Check out his YouTube video. We put it in the nest. Yeah, that one's on retirement. We didn't get to that, so we'll have to have you on again if you're open to it. But yeah, thanks again, guys, for the questions for Robin, and Robin for being so gracious to join us and answer all those questions. I want to remind you, if you're a listener, we do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. And if you need help on your Bitcoin journey, please visit bitcoinveterans.org. Fill out that form on there, the Connect form, to get in touch with us. And we will help answer questions, get you plugged into resources on your Bitcoin journey. Let's see. I guess it's Wednesday, right? So have a good Wednesday. We'll do this again tomorrow with our guest, Dr. Chase Spears. Please join us for that one. And remember, whatever you do, do not shitcoin.
I love it. Thank you so much, guys.
Yep, it's like wearing jean shorts to a funeral.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor. We call them poor.